Hey everyone, it's Gene, and how are you doing today? Welcome to another episode of Forensics Talks. This is episode 85, and my guest today is Lori Peters-James. We're going to be talking about cyber trafficking and a lot of issues surrounding trafficking. So we're going to get started here. My guest today is Lori Peters-James, and she is a specialist offender profiler whose primary function is to assess, analyze, and predict criminal behavior. She has a strong background in psychology, criminology, intelligence, and law, and she's been an advocate for cyber awareness and training. As the Chief Operation Officer at Cyber Ready Consulting Services, Lori's been involved in the profiling, investigation, detection, and prosecution of cyber crimes, and she also does training for police in cyber trafficking, discussing issues, and of course, the large rise of cyber trafficking most recently, the devastating impacts and potential solutions. And so let me bring her in here. There she is. Hey, Lori, how are you?
Hey, Eugene. Good to be here. I'm well, thank you, and yourself.
Thank you so much. Thanks for being here all the way from South Africa. And I think you are near somewhere in between, I think, Johannesburg and Pretoria or something like that, right?
That's correct, yes. Centurion.
Great, great. So, Lori, I want to start with you and how you got started and how you found your way into Cyber Ready Consulting. So can you tell me a little bit about your background?
Yes, sure. So I started off my career, strangely, in the South African Air Force and then moved into the Department of Transport as an air traffic controller and then back into the intelligence world. And then I studied law and criminology. Yeah, and then I found myself at a loss in Botswana. I got married and we moved to Botswana, where I spent 10 years. And that was where my interest was piqued in cybercrime, because Botswana, with the death penalty, has a very low murder rate. So there were no serial killers to hunt down, unfortunately. So we had to change direction. And so I moved into the financial crime and then the cyber world. And then we started to have some cyber conferences. Of course, it was a big issue. People were really desperate for knowledge. And I built on the cyber from there. Started developing profiles of dark psychology, cyber criminals, online sexual predators, cyber bullying and the management of cyber bullying cases, and then cyber stalking and harassment. And we've developed a whole bunch of tools around that. And then, as I said, I started CyberEti in 2019. And there I changed the focus slightly away from cyber, because I moved back to South Africa in 2020. So now we deal with all aspects of crime. But what's very interesting is that even your old-fashioned crimes, things like murder, like rape, your victim selection is now often done in the cyber world. You know, the cyber is now impacting even on the common law crimes. And it's a very interesting field. It's a new field. It's a developing field. That together with the cybersecurity aspects, you know, while the rest of IT is retrenching people, cybersecurity is employing people, and it's growing. And we're looking at about 3.7 million jobs going to be opening up now, between now and 2025. So it really is an exciting and interesting field.
Yeah, for sure. And I don't remember how we met exactly. I think it might have been through like LinkedIn or something online. But I do recall we had a really good conversation. I think the first time we spoke on the phone, and we were talking about, you know, things like the issues surrounding kids with like Facebook and social media and all kinds of stuff like that. And so I think that's what got me interested in speaking to you and having you as a guest here. You brought up a lot of really interesting points. So you've obviously been studying this topic for quite some time. Let me start by asking you, how would you define cyber trafficking, and, you know, what are there different kinds?
Yes, well, they are and they aren't. So let's start with the definition of trafficking in persons, because that's what we're actually looking at. We're looking at the cyber aspect of trafficking in persons. So what is trafficking in persons really? Well, the first thing that you have to have is an act. So the act would be any person who delivers, recruits, transports, transfers, harbors, sells, or exchanges, or leases, or receives a person anywhere in the world, really, because it is a global phenomenon. And then the means that you have to look at is, how does it happen? So it's either through things like, and I mean, this isn't an extensive list, a threat of harm, the use of force or other forms of coercion, the use, the abuse of vulnerable people, fraud, deception, abduction, kidnapping, the abuse of power, the direct or the indirect giving or receiving of payments or benefits to obtain consent from a person, or having control over a person with a person that's in authority over another person. And then also the indirect or direct giving or receiving of payments for compensation or reward or benefit or any other advantage. So that's how it's done. And then the next important thing to look at is how that this is mainly for the purpose. What is the purpose of this? It's for the purpose of the exploitation of that person, be it online, in person, through selling, through bondage, through sex trafficking, through labor trafficking, through organ trafficking, or any of these types of things. And when we put the cyber into it, it's actually committing these acts using IT or a computer.
Okay. Yeah. Because normally when we think about trafficking, there's sort of a stereotypical image that maybe many people have in their heads of, you know, somebody standing on the corner of the road and, you know, the pimp is close by or something. And, you know, they're selling, you know, young kids or something for prostitution or something like that. But now it's completely changed. And so how prevalent is cyber trafficking globally? It's a global problem, but how big of a problem is it?
It is a global problem. You know, there's a trafficking ring in basically every single town on the globe almost today. So it's monumental. In value, trafficking in persons is an industry worth approximately $150 billion. Whereas if you look at the entire airline industry, it's worth a profit of $22 billion. So that'll put it in a little bit of perspective for you. So it is huge and it's growing. And, you know, as long as there are perpetrators out there looking for these services, it's going to continue to grow.
When it comes to things like the kinds of people that make up, because, you know, you said it's organized, right? So it's organized. It's a form of organized crime. But what is the makeup of the cyber traffickers? Are they typically men? Are there women involved? Are they young males? What is the typical makeup?
So the typical makeup of a good cyber trafficking organization, you generally have a woman somewhere near the top, interestingly enough. And these women have often been groomed and gone through the system as victims at some point. So although the pimps and the muscle is male, usually, the person that's there to keep the victims in line is often female and a person that's been previously trafficked because they really understand all the challenges. Then you have involved in these rings, because it's organized crime, you've got the money launderers, you've got the doctors, lawyers, people that make counterfeit documents, the transport networks, if they're transported. But with cyber trafficking, you don't need to transport the victim. You can traffic them from inside of their own homes, which we saw a big increase in during COVID, because kids were locked in their homes with their parents and their siblings, and they were trafficked online by their own parents who were looking for an income and desperate for incomes. So yeah, it's huge. It can happen to anyone, and anybody can be a trafficker. You will walk past a trafficker in the street and you won't know that it's a trafficker. And that's what makes them so dangerous.
Yeah, I thought it was pretty interesting, though, you saying, you know, like you have lawyers and doctors involved. These are people who should be helping and serving the community, but you're saying that they're involved doctors to make sure that, I guess, they keep the victims safe and keep them producing money or doing what they have to do.
Well, you know, you have instances, especially with child sex abuse victims, where the doctor will be there to stitch the child up directly after they've been abused so that they can be put to work again as quickly as possible. Unfortunately, we also have things like the NGOs that are involved. there are police officers that are involved. Now, of course, I'm in South Africa, and our police force is a problem. We've had a case where a victim ran to the police in Sunnyside in Pretoria, and the police trafficked her back to the trafficker for sex. So, you know, anything goes depending on where you are and what the challenges are in that country. And South Africa faces a massive corruption problem. And they're in league with a lot of the organized criminals. So one doesn't ever want to put down the police, because please God, there are many, many fantastic police officers really trying to make a difference. But unfortunately, you know, we do have the bad apples as well.
Yeah, no, I that's everywhere, I guess. In terms of the laws, like, so when it comes to trafficking and cyber trafficking, like in specifically, I don't know how well versed you are with laws around the world, or if they're very similar everywhere. But in South Africa, for example, like, what are some of the laws that pertain to cyber trafficking?
Well, we have the Sexual Offences Act that covers it. And then we've also got a specific law around human trafficking. So we have a Trafficking Act. And that deals with the act, the protection of the victims, what to do, the sentences, and so on. It's very comprehensive. South Africa has some of the best legislation in the world around trafficking. And that's why we're able to prosecute it so effectively. Incidentally, and very interestingly, South Africa has the highest sentence in the world for trafficking. We had a case where a young girl was trafficked by her aunt and her daughter, part of the family, brought into the country under the guise of being educating her. She was then trafficked online, specifically by these two perpetrators. And eventually, after the prosecution, we managed to secure 19 life sentences and 45 years. And that is the highest sentence globally handed down in a trafficking case. So South Africa's pretty good. Yeah, South Africa's pretty good when we can get a conviction, we do. And we're also very, you know, our hawks are getting there on the investigation side. We have some dedicated officers, and we work in league with Interpol, with UNODC. We've got a lot of help from US Homeland Security. The US Secret Service assists with the training of our hawks. So there's a giant effort to do something about the trafficking, at least. You know, we also at Cyberity, we train the law enforcement as well, so that also gives them a little bit of a heads up, and we do it very reasonably to assist the community, because it's in everybody's best interest to combat this crime.
The fact that the laws are more aggressive, let's say, in South Africa, was it because it was a problem there more than other places?
Look, South Africa, because of its strategic position and because that we have a number of large harbors, South Africa became a hub for trafficking. So the victims would come down through South Africa, be trafficked through South Africa, held in South Africa, and loaded onto cargo ships in our harbors, and then trafficked to places like China and the Middle East and so on. Because South Africa has very good trade relations with countries like China, so our ships aren't searched. And that opens the door to making us a corridor and a hub for trafficking. And it has been that way. So countries like Botswana, Zambia, Zimbabwe, they're all landlocked. They have to get to a harbor somehow. So they'll either use Mozambique or they'll use South Africa. And South Africa is bigger. And as I said, it's a country that's facing many corruption issues. So there's the possibilities of bribing your way through it, or at least working with the powers that be to actually traffic these victims, basically uninterrupted.
Okay. Well, how do you, for example, when I think about trafficking, especially with like young children, I don't know why, but places in Asia pop into my mind. And it's just sort of maybe because of what I've seen on the media, and even in the past week or two, what I've seen, you know, stories on YouTube and things like that. you'll see people that travel on these so-called vacations, and they head up over to some Asian country to do whatever they have to do. So are there certain places in the world where, you know, trafficking of young children is, you know, rampant? And then where in the world would you say is probably the biggest location or the largest country for cyber trafficking?
Well, America is the largest buyer of trafficked victims. So that would make them the hub. Yes, there are markets in the Middle East and the Far East. But these victims are often sold through onto American buyers, or American buyers visit these countries in order to abuse these trafficked victims. And they're sold online or auctioned online. It's fairly simple. It's very interesting when you look at the recruitment and the sale. So we see a couple of different categories here. So they're either recruited online and sold online. They could be recruited in the real world and sold online, or recruited online and sold in the real world, or recruited online and sold both online and in the real world. So it's very interesting. You always have to follow the buyer, follow the money, because the country that where you have the most buyers is the country that will be the hub, and that is the USA.
What is a typical way that a predator goes from a very innocuous post or a text message or something like that, all the way to, you know, getting these, you know, children to perform sexual acts on camera? Like what's that process like?
Well, okay, let's use one of our South African cases as a case study here. So this was an interesting one. We had a chap named Kent Locke in South Africa. He was a youth pastor. So Mr. Locke, in his position that he was in, he was also a very good photographer. He was a surfing photographer. So he would upload a page where he would capture data, which looked like Instagram. Then he would send this link to the kids, that the girls in the church. He would then tell the girls, please, would you go and vote for my photograph? They would land on this Instagram page. They'd put in their logging details, and they would just think the link didn't work. So they'd go. Meanwhile, he had now grabbed all their credentials from this page. He would then at night log in as one of the young girls and then solicit the boys to send him images, which they did. You know, young boys don't think too well. And the more we try and teach them, don't send images of your face and your private areas in the same photo. They don't learn. But anyway, so they would do that. And then he would ask for more material, but this as the girl. And these boys would oblige. And then finally, the kids would realize this has gone too far. This was now becoming really lewd, and they were afraid. And he would tell them, you cannot go to the police, because given what you've already posted, the police will arrest you. So they were terrified. So who did they go to? The youth pastor for help. So they went off to Mr. Locke in his capacity as the youth pastor, who then said to them, well, you know what? You don't really have a choice here. There's nothing, nobody's going to help you. So please go, and even if you need to use my laptop, go up to my study and masturbate and do what you have to do. And then, you know, hopefully they'll go away. And then he would take the material and sell it or trade it, because these people with these tendencies, they tend to trade material. So when we do have an arrest of this nature, where we have this type of perpetrator, which is a cyber trafficker, we often find that these cases are linked, and we'll find the addresses and shared components of 4,000 to 5,000, maybe even more, up to 7,000 IP addresses from people that have traded this material. So it is interesting because this opens up the networks. And this is all being done. People think that this is on the deep web. It's not. This isn't deep or dark web. This is surface web. This is out and out trading. There's no dark web involved here. I mean, once we move to the dark web, it's a whole different ballgame again. But this is surface web.
Yeah, I was just going to ask you that. Like, you know, this is all done right on, you know, if obviously Instagram, he's logging into their Instagram accounts and he's doing this all like right on the surface. So there's nothing very hidden. And so who caught on in that case?
Most trafficking is like most cybercrime. It starts with identity theft because they hide behind what we call the veil of anonymity. And most of these perpetrators become quite skilled at hiding behind this veil of anonymity and actually hiding their identities, but Mr. Locke, he didn't have to. He captured the data, the credentials of the girls, and then he exploited the boys. So that's fairly common. One of the children actually made a report, and then U.S. Homeland Security did the digital forensics for this in cooperation with the South African police, which was fantastic. And that's what I say, South Africa is really jacked, and the relationships between these entities are solid, and they do get assistance. And this is what these people don't understand. You know, when you traffic, it doesn't matter from where you traffic. If you traffic from South Africa, if you traffic from Finland, or you traffic from Asia, it doesn't matter. Once you upload those images onto an American server, you can be prosecuted under American law. So if you upload onto a Google server or a Facebook server or an Instagram server, you're uploading onto an American server. And then it's fairly easy for law enforcement to get the subpoenas. And in fact, you can be extradited to stand trial in America.
I was going to bring up a slide, and it was something that you sent me, but I think it's an important point, and it has to do with the actual value. Like there has to be some monetary benefit into all this, because otherwise people wouldn't actually risk this. But the slide you sent me was actually with respect to Canada, which is obviously where I live. Yes. And looking at some of the values of, you know, what you can sell somebody for or profit in a week or a month or a year. So is this similar around the world, or are there places where people get more or less money? It's more profitable or less profitable?
I think it doesn't. It's pretty standard. You know, depending on if you're in the poorest countries in Africa, it will probably be less. But for the US market, the Canadian market, maybe Mexico might be less. I think you have to look at the value of the currencies, but for Canada, that would be pretty accurate. And that's dealing in children, you know, from the ages of 12 to 25. The more, outlandish, or the more bizarre the sexual favors that are requested, the higher the rates will be. So if you're dealing with very young children, or you're looking for victims that are between the ages of 2 and 4, for example, you'll pay more. The unfortunate thing is that these children have a very short shelf life. They really survive longer than 2 years, working life. And then they are either sold into the labor trafficking markets, not the sex trafficking markets, because they're no longer suitable, or they're simply murdered for organs.
Now, what about we talked about how much they make, but what about the transfer of money? Like, so where is there a role that crypto currencies play here, or is it not even that complicated? People are doing things over PayPal, credit cards, or whatever. How is the transfer of money happening?
It's not that complicated. So it's either cash, which is laundered through cash businesses and casinos and these sorts of things. Typical organized crime setup, nothing different. So either, you know, all your general money laundering techniques will work when you're dealing with cash. Alternatively, I mean, this is organized crime. So they're either laundering the money through business. There's the entire crypto market. So it's vast. If they're trading on the dark web, then generally it's crypto.
Question about obviously going through the pandemic. So was there a, now that I would say the pandemic is well over, has there been a reduction in cyber trafficking? Was it just something that got, you know, was because of the pandemic, or is it still sort of at its all-time high?
No, it's still at its all-time high. The thing is, although the pandemic is over, the financial effects of the pandemic are not over. They're not even nearly over. I think we will still be seeing the effects of the pandemic for at least another 5 years. And that's if we don't get driven into another pandemic, which looks like it might be on the cards. Given given the agendas of some of these people. But anyway, besides that, so we had a lot of problems with COVID because we had vulnerable societies literally with their freedom deprived, locked up in houses. Many, many, many people lost their jobs. They became desperate. The family locked up in the house was a source of income. They would simply turn one bedroom into an area where they could perform sex acts on the children and film it and start to traffic these kids from the actual home. Of course, another problem was that law enforcement was severely stressed and curtailed during that time. The funding dried up because companies were struggling. So the funding for the NGOs dried up. The NGOs also were no longer mobile. So we had a lot of knock-on effects, which were directly related to COVID. And that's not going away, because once a criminal finds a really easy way of making money, they're not going to stop just because the circumstance stops. Now the kids can go to school and they are allowed to do, I mean, we're back to, let's say, normality with reference to that. But there's nothing to stop them trafficking those children in the evenings or in the afternoons. And they've learned the methodologies. They've invested in the technology and the lighting and everything else. They're not going to throw it away. And they found a way to make money.
Yeah. I want to ask you about another case. I guess it's the South African version of Jeffrey Epstein. Where North America has Jeffrey Epstein and you had your own version of that. But it's just this other guy who I believe is in prison now. He's probably not coming out anytime soon. But is it Bernard Ackerman?
Ackerman.
Yeah. What can you tell me about him?
Very like Epstein, also traded in kids. He actually had 740 cases brought against him. The trial has been completed. He has been found guilty on multiple counts. I'm not 100% sure if he's been sentenced. I'd have to check that. But he's facing multiple life sentences. He'll never get out of prison. Again, the solicitation of very vulnerable victims. And this is what happens. Unfortunately, you know, it's, although anybody can be trafficked, let's be very clear. It doesn't matter who you are, where you come from, what your risk factors are, anybody can be trafficked. But the problem is the vulnerable are targeted. And they're easy to exploit because of desperation. So again, you know, the recruitment of vulnerable victims and the sale of these victims online. Again, these cases open up multiple avenues for investigation because of the sharing of the material. So again, this case also opened up a huge amount of IP addresses that are currently under investigation, increasing the trafficking, where investigators are looking at other members of the trafficking rings.
Yeah, it's interesting. I was reviewing the Amanda Todd case here in Canada, and you know, she, for those that don't know, that, you know, basically a young woman, she's online and, you know, she ends up flashing, you know, for the camera and just through, stupid. Yeah. And then through, you know, the just embarrassment and shaming and this one in particular individual, which wasn't in Canada, which was, I believe he was in the Netherlands. Yeah. He was Dutch, just kept after her no matter where she went. And, yeah, but it was when I was looking and reviewing the story, you know, she wasn't completely nude or whatever. Yes, it was embarrassing or whatever, but that's not, I think, what got her. It was the stress of continuously being harassed and followed, and like there was nowhere for her to escape. So in that case, it wasn't so much the act, it was the fact that she was vulnerable.
Yes, and this was a cyberbullying case. But if you actually look at the facts of the case, that case could have been prosecuted as trafficking because she was targeted, recruited, and terrorized and exploited and for the purposes of exploitation. And that exploitation doesn't have to be monetary. It can be for sexual gratification. So, that's a case that should have and could have been prosecuted as trafficking. And this is what we're doing in South Africa now. We're taking cases that would have been prosecuted as rape or would have been prosecuted as molestation or indecent assault or any of these types of cases. And we are prosecuting them as trafficking. Because under South African law now, the law is this tight that if you own the trucking company that moves a victim, you can be prosecuted for trafficking. If you own a house where the victim is kept, you can be prosecuted for trafficking. You form part of the trafficking ring. And that's what we have to do. We have to prosecute all acts involved in the trafficking and not as the common law, common crimes. And if we do that, we're going to close it down fairly quickly.
Yeah, you'd hope so. I'm going to bring up a question here from Amber. She's asking, how often are you invited to discuss the profiles of the buyers of those being trafficked, the labor or sex?
Fairly often. We've got various profiles that we do look at. We look at the profiles of both, actually, the victim and the perpetrator. But, you know, there's some very specific personality traits that raise their heads over and over again. And one of these is the lack of empathy, complete lack of empathy. That victim to that trafficker is not a person. It's a commodity. So they are seen as a commodity. They are treated as a commodity. They are exploited until they have no further use in the sex trafficking market as a commodity. And then a lot of these cases, they are murdered and their organs are once again sold as a commodity. So there's no humanity in these people. And that's something that you have to bear in mind. These people do not view their victims as human. They view them as things to be, as a vessel to be for money to be made off them, which is very, very sad. But you're dealing with psychopathic type personalities. In order to actually reach one of the primary, traits of psychopathy is a complete lack of empathy. And most people involved in the trafficking trade have that complete lack of empathy.
Yeah, you just, you know, you mentioned that, you know, they're using these victims. It's bad enough already, you know, for sex profit or whatever. But now, you know, when you said they're actually murdering them for organs, like that's a pretty dark place to be at. That's hard to imagine that people can go that far. But unfortunately, I think, yeah, it's just the reality of what we're faced with. In some places, it's probably going to happen. And there, again, there's a market for that too, right? In terms of, and I think there's a graphic I'm going to look for here, but I believe you had something where it actually shows your body parts and what kind of money you can make on the body parts. I'm going to see if I can bring it up. Oh yeah, here's one here. I'll bring it up here. And I'm not sure where you got this graphic from, but what can you tell me?
Yeah, that's quite an old one. So the value is a little bit higher than that now. But yeah, you can see that... You're worth quite a bit of money. A heart now goes for really good money. Up to $150,000 for a heart. Lungs, similar. So, yeah, once you start breaking down the human body, I mean, even today with organ transplants, even the skin is worth money. You know, they harvest the skin for skin transplants today. So it's not just the actual organs anymore. I mean, the skin is an organ, obviously, but even that's worth money. So, and your hair is worth money to be made wigs out of. you know, everything has a price, everything has a cost. And these people are only interested in that commodity market.
I want to ask you about, or start moving into, the investigation of these types of crimes and the role that the police play and the kinds of tools that they have as well. So do the police, I mean, nowadays, I'm pretty sure that, you know, the police will often try to bait some of these people in the background. You know, they're also hiding there. The police are hiding their own identity and, you know, pretending that they're maybe young women or something like that. But what kinds of tools or what kinds of ways are there that the police are investigating and trying to fight this type of crime?
So look, often what happens with a police investigation, it will lead you to a specific website. And once that perpetrator has been identified and arrested, often they will give up the credentials of that website. And then the police will take over and operate that website for a number of months and identify everything that they can from that website before they shut it down. So they will actually become the operators of the website. And that's where you get the best information that you can get. I mean, obviously, they're also extremely powerful law enforcement forensics tools. They will take the devices. They'll make copies of the forensic copies of the devices. It's very interesting when that happens. It was something I learned from some of the forensics guys here. They never reuse a hard drive, so it cannot be used twice. So every hard drive that's used for every dump is a brand new hard drive. So the police here go through absolute mountains of hard drives. You know, the problem in South Africa, and it's not a problem worldwide, is that they do lack resources. But there are a number of really fabulous companies that will actually assist. So with the South African police, where there is a problem, we do have a cyber unit. But we don't have enough people to actually deal with the amount of crime that we have to deal with. So we're now looking at initiatives on how we can, sort of use the private sector to assist with this type of work. And there are fantastic tools out there. If somebody wants to get into it, I mean, there's a fabulous investigative tool out there called Multigo. A lot of the investigators use it. There's another one called Traffic Jam, which is used to hunt traffickers. That's an AI tool. And, of course, AI is going to be playing more and more of a role. If anybody wants to research that, I have sent you some links, which we're more than happy to share. And then, you know, because I am a criminologist, so I'm not a techie, I must be quite frank with you. I work in a cyber company, but I'm not a techie. So we work very closely with a fantastic company which a girl runs, an American named Alyssa Gorbachek, and they have a company called Cyber Nightwatch that does our operational our ascent for us. So they will search and look very carefully at everything. So we work closely with them. And there are other organizations that do this. We used to do a lot of work with Deliver Fund. But we found that Alyssa is very, very good at her job. So there are, if you do have a problem, if you are stalked online or anything like that, you can contact us at CyberEti, and we're more than happy to share details with Cyber Nightwatch and have that scraped for you. And there are millions of tools. I have given you a list as well, which we can add as a link. There are many, many, many tools that you can use if you are interested in this field. And also, Alyssa does a lot. We do a lot of training together, and Alyssa does a lot of training as well on actually how to operate these tools and to upskill and empower people to use them. I mean, there's a tool for everything at the moment, literally everything. There's email scrapers, Facebook login credential scrapers, Twitter scrapers, Multigo scrapes everything. There's cell phone trackers, and that's not even talking about what law enforcement can actually do. I mean, Interpol has huge databases. The UNODC has huge databases. So the forensic aspects are the resources that if governments and these organizations work together, we could, there's huge scope for closing down these operations.
Yeah. I've got another question here, and I'm going to bring it up here, but what are the challenges faced by child trafficking profilers in their efforts to dismantle networks in the global child sex trade, and what can individuals or communities do to support these efforts?
Well, there's a lot that we can do. So one of the biggest problems, not only for profilers, but for law enforcement, is a lack of resources for training. So that's a huge problem. So anybody that's prepared to help with resources or donate for training purposes to upskill the police, that's always necessary. The NGOs struggle with things like housing the victims that they actually take off the streets. These people have to be cared for, housed, assisted. Statements have to be taken, trials, visas have to be obtained when they have to testify. So, and then there's a whole repatriation program. Profilers like myself, I think the main challenges that we face are the psychological challenges, because we see a lot. You have to be very strong. Fortunately, I don't have that problem. I'm very, very good at compartmentalizing. But maybe that's because of the serial crime aspect. As a profiler, we specifically train that. But also, again, access to training, upskilling, working, building the relationships can be tricky, because a lot of the profilers are not employed by the police, the criminologists. So it's building those relationships and getting law enforcement to trust you. Because of course, that's if your law enforcement doesn't trust you and doesn't want to work with you, it's very difficult to even offer to assist, because you're pushed sideways. And in South Africa, criminology faces a lot of challenges because it actually isn't a professionalized occupation. It doesn't have professional status. It's not under social work and it's not under law. So there are challenges there as well. But I'd say your everyday challenges are just staying abreast of the technology, making sure that you because unfortunately we wake up today, we have this technology. The perpetrators wake up and they dream up another four things that they can do and use. So it's keeping track of the trends, really monitoring what is going on, staying abreast, staying strong, looking after yourself physically and mentally. So that you actually get up each day able to do the job and knowing that you can. And, I think every day has different challenges. But the biggest challenge that we do see is having to wade through hours and hours and hours and hours of videotape where children are being abused, and the impact that has on people can be quite severe.
Yeah, you brought up another point about the fact that there's no, you're saying there's like no certification, whatever. So, for example, where does somebody go if they want to turn this into a career, if they want to study this, if they want to, learn about this particular area? What's the best avenue?
No, so, Eugene, there is a certification. You actually go to university and you get a degree. And an honors and a master's. But what they don't, what they don't have in South Africa is a professional body. So if you're a medical doctor, you can register with the Health Professionals Council. If you're a lawyer, you register with the bar. But as far as criminologists go, there's no body to register with, mainly because of infighting with the universities. They can't even decide on what qualifications you need. So I have 20, 30 applications every week of people saying, can I come and do an internship with you? Can I job shadow you? But even that is difficult, because again, it's those trust relationships. You can't bring a young kid that's from university now into a job shadowing with a sensitive victim and expect that victim to open up to you. You know, sometimes you it's difficult to do, but Cyberetti, we do everything that we can to assist with upskilling and to assist the police, to assist the NGOs, anybody that reaches out to us. We do these types of webinars, you know, but there are challenges and it's been for a long time. I mean, this has been going on for 15 years and it's the academics that can't get their act together really.
Yeah, interesting. Yeah, I mean, I know that in the traditional sense, most of the universities and schools that I know of are doing the traditional forensics or you know, which is, you know, the DNA and the anthropology and the biology and the chemistry and, you know, maybe a little bit of some of the physical sciences. But very few of them are doing things on the in the e-crimes, let's call them, side. So it's almost like you have to come from a computer background as opposed to more of a forensics background. So I'll have to do some research into that and see if there's anything, for example, in Canada right now. I'm not aware of any programs that focus specifically on that.
Yes, and neither am I. And that's why we are really trying. Sorry, we are having the lighting just changed. I do apologize. We have a little issue in South Africa. It's called load shedding, where we don't have electricity for a couple of hours at a time. Which is a real challenge. Oh, that's another challenge the South African profilers face, is no power. but that's another challenge in this country, for example, even with trafficking, because when all the electricity doesn't work, then so many more opportunities open up for criminals. So to get back to what we were saying is the training. So that's what Cyberetti does. We focus very much on the training and the upskilling of, we start at primary school level and we do cyberbullying courses and we teach children how to approach online predation, how to reach out for help, how to put their WhatsApp settings, security settings up, how to set their Facebook settings. And then we move through to the cyber stalking aspects and the predation aspects. And then we train the police, in these types of crimes as well. So we're very, very focused on awareness, but also on actually providing hard skills to the people that we train. We even do things like we work with an Israeli cyber lawyer who's one of the top crypto lawyers, and we will teach the police how to track an NFT on the blockchain, how to track Bitcoin on the blockchain, because as with anything else, following the money in these types of crimes, because it's organized crimes and it's syndicates, you have to follow the money to tie up the syndicate. So these are skills that are just in short supply, but we really focus at Cyberetti on building these skills. And we do a lot of pro bono work. I do a lot of pro bono work for the courts. Because for me, I'm passionate about it. It's like, this has to stop. We've got to protect our kids. And, you know, people think that it's just girls. It's not. I mean, boy children now represent 30% of the victims. 30% of children's trafficked at the moment are boys. And they're trafficked into sex trafficking. You know, it's a lot of the public doesn't realize that. It's everybody is vulnerable, and unfortunately people are trusting, you know, people don't want to believe the worst of other people. And by the time they do, it's too late. They're trapped and they can't get out.
Yeah. Well, education, I think, is a big part of it, as you said, because, and I think in a previous conversation that we had, you mentioned also, you know, sometimes victims, they don't know where to go, or they fear the authorities. They don't know. They don't, either because of shame, or, you know, they're afraid of being embarrassed or something. But
well, it's more than that, because they are, remember that they often find themselves in a different country of origin from their own. Their passports are confiscated. they're actually then illegally in the country because they have no documentation. In South Africa, especially, we've had a lot of xenophobic attacks, and you know, we go through these xenophobic periods, and where foreigners are targeted, and unfortunately, the police are not always kind, especially the police at station level. You know, once you move up the rank and you start to move into the specialized units, it's different. But at station level and on the ground, it's horrific for these people.
Let me ask you about something that I think is important, and I want to bring it up on screen here, but it had to do with the advertising of, you know, or trying to tell the difference between what is a legal ad online and something which is suspicious. And I have these graphics here that you provided me, and I'm not sure if you want to do them in any particular order, but, maybe you can explain some of the differences of what to look for sometimes online in these ads.
Yeah. So, when a prostitute, a general prostitute, advertises her services online, you'll see something like this ad that we have on screen now. A prostitute working for herself can set limits. So she can say, I'm available from 8 to 5. I don't do BDSM. I'm willing to do this and this and this. So they set limits. They often, the images that they put on are classy. They're, you know, all their selfies a lot of the time because they're taken by them, because it's all willing. With a trafficked victim, you won't see that. You will see degrading images more than you'll see these types of classy type images. There's a lot of things that you'll look for in a trafficked victim. I'm quite happy to make these graphics available as well, so we can actually put. I'll send you a Word document which we can link in. But the things that you can look for in a trafficked victim are keywords such as new in town, because what they do with trafficked victims is they move them from town to town to town to town. So they'll only stay in a certain area for a short time, because once they've been used by that clientele, they're then bored with them, so they move them, and they'll move a new set of girls in. So new in town is quite a common thing that you'll see. You'll also see sometimes new girl. You'll also see any age accepted. You'll see any no limits on what they'll offer. You'll see things like no law enforcement. You'll see fresh. The word fresh comes up quite often. Snow bunny, terms like that. Here for a short time again, which pushes that the girl, they need to get in quickly because the girl will be moved in a short time. If you look at the image that you've got there, I don't actually have that image with me at the moment. But if you look at the next image, the image of the actual trafficked victim, you will see that you can pick either of those two. So for example, there, you'll see that the imagery is much more graphic. It's bordering on vulgar type imagery. The image is taken usually by a third party, and not by the victim themselves. The advert will say the subject is independent, but the phone number will be attributed to many victims and not just one. You'll also see that the images and the verbiage is present, and the description or the categories that they prepared to enter into are much greater. You'll see in this one, for example, they only speak Russian and Ukrainian. Now, of course, with the war, we've seen a massive increase in Ukrainian victims because they're vulnerable at the moment. You'll see that victim is advertised in Poland, but she speaks Russian and Ukrainian and very little German. So that would be something to look for. They also will advertise the sexual services in other destination countries. Say, for example, she'll be in Germany in a few months. If you look at them, they also often have physical marks on the body because often they are beaten up. They also often look malnourished. They look very stressed. They usually say these victims are available 24/7. And that they are willing to travel. The subject is usually advised to as a call-in only, and often they'll blur the victim's face, so the face won't be visible because they have to do that because there's reverse image search tools that will search for that victim's facial features. And then also, you know, they may advertise medically risky services, like anal, you know, all the anals and the BDSs, SMs and things like that. So these are things that you can look for as members of the public. So if you see these types of advertisements where the victim is being degraded, that's a very good indicator. And then, Eugene, I don't know if you've got the other slide there. There's some interesting things there that we can just quickly have a look at, and that's the emoji indicators, which is another very interesting one because a lot of the trafficked victims and the online ads have certain emojis that are used to portray certain products. We wouldn't say, they refer to as product. So there you would use like a pink flower or a pink heart for a young boy or a minor or a child or a young girl. If they move on the move, they'll put an aeroplane. If they're under a pimp or a trafficker's control, they'll have the crown. If you've got, you know, there's a whole bunch there that you can actually see. There's symbols for a two-girl special, a snow bunny, a penis, oral sex. So that's often just depicted with the emoji, but the trafficker, the Johns, the actual buyer, are very well aware of these indicators. So they are, as I said, I'm more than happy to put this in a Word document and make it available, and we can add it into the links because this is something where the public can actually really, really assist a lot because. I mean, you guys are on the web a lot and you may be exposed to something like this. And if you are, I'm sure we're going to share Cyberetti's details. And you're welcome to get hold of us. If you notice this type of advert, we can point law enforcement to it very, very quickly. And we can track. So. Please do keep a lookout for these types of advertisements. And this is surface web. This is not dark web. This is surface web. Twitter is a monster. Telegram, it's all over the Telegram groups. Telegram is basically trafficking world. So is Twitter. Twitter has a huge amount of human trafficking on it. Facebook, Instagram, Tinder, disaster for recruitment. So basically all the social media sites are vehicles for these types of adverts.
Okay. Let me ask you, what's next for you in terms in this area? Are there any areas in particular that you're pursuing much deeper, you know, than maybe some other areas, or like what's next for you?
So I will continue to fight the fight as best I can. I'll continue to work with the youth and upskilling them on the cyber trafficking. Of course, I will continue with my expert witness testimony and the other the criminogenic work that I do. I will help law enforcement the best I can. I also do a lot of commercial work where we assist people that are victims of sextortion and these types of crimes, which I'll continue to do. I am on a little mission at the moment, however, because I'm trying to upskill myself on the OSINT side so that I don't have to be as reliable on the techies as I am at the moment. So I'm doing my best to become a semi-techie. I think it'd probably take me a few years, but I'm working on that. And also just I upskill permanently. So I'm always doing courses in psychology and, you know, trying to do two or three courses every month just to upskill and learn something new every day. Because I think for all of us, as long as one day isn't wasted, you know, we move forward with our life. And I think knowledge is power. And I'm on a quest to have more and more knowledge.
Yes, definitely. Well, I want to send out the this is the link to your website. It's cyberready.com. And there's a contact page there. So you could go there. And there's an email address, I guess, where people can reach out to you. Would it be okay if I showed your LinkedIn account as well?
Yes, absolutely. My LinkedIn's there. The company's LinkedIn's there.
Yep. Yeah, there it is. So you can also reach out, I guess, there. Then people can message you or get a hold of you if they want to talk to you about a case or if they want to talk about training and that sort of thing. They can always reach you somehow. You're available.
Yes, absolutely. And as I said, if they need technical assistance, we're more than happy to pass them along to Alyssa. She does an awesome job on the tech side. So yeah, just make contact with me and we'll make sure that you end up with somebody that can actually assist.
Excellent. Well, look, I want to thank you very much for this informative talk. It's not something that I've really addressed before, and there's a lot going on the cyber side. There's a lot recently that looking online about the growth of not just cyber trafficking, but just cyber crimes in general. They're just going off the charts because everyone is online these days, and the criminals are getting smarter and smarter about, you know, how they are getting you. And I can't stand it because I can't get, you know, I don't know about you, but, you know, junk emails and calls and texts. And now they're just, there's just so much. Everyone's getting bombarded with garbage. And you know that if you just one day inadvertently click on the wrong link or something, you know, it's going to mess you up for a long time, you know.
Well, we work with that. So if people have problems and they're worried about their general cybersecurity, we have developed some checklists. So if you do get a hold of me, we can send you the checklists that you can actually do the tests, get a score, see where you're vulnerable and where you at least need to start to fix things. You know, we've developed checklists around business risk, about digital reputation risk. So basically everything to do with protecting yourself online. So yeah, just get a hold of us and we'll help. And if we can't help, we'll find somebody who can.
Yeah, exactly. Well, Laurie, thank you so much. Really appreciate it. Do me a favor, hang back for a second because I want to come back and just chat with you for a little bit. But yeah, I really appreciate your time. And I think in the future, we'll have you back maybe with Alyssa and talking more about the technical tools and other things around just cyber crimes.
Thank you for having me. And to everybody that popped in and listened to the chat, thank you for all your time and patience. And I hope the talk was at least informative. And maybe we saved a life today. Let's hope so.
Let's hope so. Thank you.